the buzzer, McCord on its way.
Oh my goodness!
They have to get it. With no timeouts, they do.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to the world's greatest podcast, known as Courtside with Greenberg and Dokic. We're going to have Mike Boynton on in a second, the Oklahoma State head coach, who has a terrific basketball team, by the way. But D Square, I got a text message from you to say that said, basically, I'm running hot. Give me some space. The floor is yours.
Well, I'm disgusted, and I was thinking about this. A couple years ago, the NFL had a problem. They had a problem with concussions. They had a league-wide problem. A lot of people thought the NFL was going to go away. What'd they do? They fixed the problem internally. No hits to the head. Different rules. College basketball has a monster problem. College basketball has a perception problem that everybody cheats. And I'm going to tell you something, Seth. I'm starting to believe everybody does, and I'll tell you why. There's absolutely no accountability. There is none. Will Wade has a job. Sean Miller has a job. Five violations. This isn't the first time. Major violations. Nine total. And these guys have jobs. As my wife, who is a college softball coach and a great one, said, there are no rules in college basketball. There's no accountability in college basketball. Where are athletic directors? But more importantly, Seth, where the hell are the coaches? We used to have guys stand up. We used to have Dean Smith stood up. John Thompson stood up. Bob Knight stood up. Where are these guys? Where's Kay? Where's anybody denouncing guys cheating? You know what modern college basketball coaches do? They count their damn money. They learn how to kiss players' asses. And they make sure that their little world, their little empire is safe. And I'm tired of it. Hey, we've seen this. We've seen this in football. College football coaches, hey man, they police themselves in a lot of ways behind the scenes. College basketball coaches, hell. College basketball is going down the tubes. College basketball's problem is perception. The perception that only March Madness counts. The perception that everybody is cheating. And I got to tell you, Seth, I find it hard to believe that they're not right. I mean, we talk to coaches all the time, and they talk about men and blah, 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 blah. My ass. And then they all know. They all know you can cheat. They all know you should cheat. 2002, I get the West Virginia job. Some dumbass president there threatens me and my wife. So I say to hell with it. I'm not working for some guy. I go from $500,000 back to $125,000 back to the Mac, and I get ripped, still get ripped. Well, you know what? I can live with myself. I don't know how these college coaches live with themselves. I don't know how these guys make deals like they do and then look at the camera like they're freaking angels, like they're just these poor saintly guys that only want the best for their players. They're buying and selling every day, and I'm sick of it. I'm serious. We need to save college basketball, not you and I, but the college coaches. The perception problem is horrible, Seth. We're a month away from college basketball starting, and there is literally no buzz. Why? Because people, first and foremost, pay attention to the NFL because the NFL is smart enough to go year-round. Calipari's been saying go in August with college basketball forever, and he's right. Hell yes, he's right. The other thing is the perception of college basketball, which has more inventory on television than any other sport, is that, these guys are a bunch of bought and sold players. I never believed that until recently. Swear to God, Seth, I used to hear guys say that, and I would fight tooth and nail. No, you don't understand. No. But when I see guys just blatantly get away with stuff, when I see guys that just simply thumb their nose at any type of rules, and I don't see other coaches calling anybody out, I don't see anything other than some whatever from the NABC, I think it's garbage. I do. And I think it's got to be fixed, Seth. And I think there's got to be a come to Jesus where people just decide, and I'm not talking about just coaches. I'm talking about school administrators. Is it really that important, the 6,000 people that come to see frickin' LSU at a place? Is it really that important to tarnish your whole university to get your 5,000 people in your 12,000-seat Maravich Center? Is it really that important? I mean, that your whole university when it comes to sports, at least in basketball, is looked at in a certain way? Is it really that important? Like, nobody else in the world can win at Arizona? Like, nobody can win at Arizona except a guy that continually is in the news for cheating. I understand due process. Great. But this has been going on for 2 years. Is he the only guy in Arizona that can win a basketball game there? So, Arizona, is it worth it to have this every 6 months? Maybe it is, Seth. Maybe it is, man. And I know there's more to it. I know there's contracts. But, damn, we're supposed to be higher education first. We're supposed to be teaching life lessons first. If I'm a player in Arizona, you know what I know? Man, my coach is slick. Holy cow. Hey, man, coach, how do you keep escaping John Gotti? And I think it's crap, Seth. We're at a pivotal moment here because college basketball, we just saw, isn't going to even have maybe the Champions Classic, maybe not Jimmy B, maybe not some of the marquee events. And man, oh man, when you start slipping in a world dominated by football, it's going to be hard to climb back up that mountain, Seth. Anyway, I am running hot. I am.
I like it. Let me say this.
I'm a guy, and this is a fact. I'm a guy, didn't drink, didn't smoke. All I did was go on my court and play basketball and loved and revered coaches. I used to go in between games in the Indiana High School Association to a place called the Coney King with my dad because all the great Gary, Indiana coaches would come in there, Ike Brown, Ron Heflin, Earl Smith. These guys would come in, and I'd sit there, and I'd just have my eyes wide open, just listening to coaches. There's a coach that my dad played for at Iowa State. Maybe nobody ever heard of Buzz Connor, but Buzz Connor came to my dad and my uncle's Christmas, and I sat there as a little freaking kid, man. Buzz Connor. I didn't know what the hell he was, but I knew he was a head coach at Idaho State. That was big to me. And so I revere coaches, Seth, but this is making me bat crazy, excuse my language, because we got to do something. And you and I have this platform. We can talk, but Seth, truthfully, it's just a platform. Somebody's got to get their head out of our ass, out of their ass, quit cheating. The only guy that can win at Kansas is Bill Self. He's the only guy in the history of Kansas ever win. I can look at Kansas history. It's pretty damn good. A lot of coaches have won at Kansas. That's the only guy that can win. Only guy that can win in Arizona is freaking Sean Miller. Only guy that can fill 1,200 people into seats at LSU is this freaking guy, Wade. Come on. There you go.
That was as good a rant as we've heard in years. A couple things. First of all, you know, the one thing that I've always said is cheating is not a victimless crime.
Right.
Because if one guy's cheating, then it's going to cost another guy a job. I mean, that's just the way it is. It's not a victimless crime. In fact, when that conversation comes up, I get calls from guys that have been fired and say, wait a second here. You know, like, here's the deal. I'm the residual effect of cheating. The second thing is, I think we've got a great opportunity right now for college basketball because we're not going to compete against the NBA. So for about the next month and a half, if we can get off the ground, if we can get past the restrictions, you know, that we're losing some of the events at Disney. And that's more of a Disney issue than anything else because the coach. But we will own the sport for about 8 weeks. We need to seize that moment. And you're right. We need to find a way to have some positive momentum and seize that opportunity.
Can I stop you?
Yeah, go ahead.
Like, I know Calipari is the evil empire, right? And everybody. But when I see – And if somebody wants to tell me, well, he's a cheater, then prove it, right? Of all these guys, and they were talking about cheating in the SEC in a Pat 40 article, Cal's name wasn't there. If you look at positivity coming out of a program, where do you see it first and foremost, but nobody wants to pay attention to it? It's out of Kentucky.
No doubt.
Kids are going to the NBA. And even more importantly, and this is something that I know.
No one ever gets in trouble.
No one gets in trouble but Seth. They all give back to their damn university. They were taught to respect where the hell they play and what they're doing. And I think that is so freaking important. We need positive. We need accountability. We need, I don't know. We just need more people to say, look, it isn't right that a board of regents is going to let guys keep jobs. It isn't right that people can be on tape talking about big ass offers or whatever. It's not right. And you and me saying it, that's fine. We have a pretty good platform. But, man, would it be more powerful coming from other coaches publicly? But everybody's afraid to do it, and I don't understand why. La Costa Nostra.
Yeah, I mean, I think people are in the mindset of control your controllables. What can you control? You deal with your world, and that's just the way it is.
But that's not the way this sport was grown.
Way back in the day, the guys who cheated, they used to have a saying, honor amongst thieves. Does that still exist? I don't know. But here's the deal. If nothing happens in the next 6 months, nothing happens in the next 6 months with these outside investigations that the NCAA has created, that protocol, all right, then all hell's going to break loose. Hell's going to break loose.
You and I have been saying that for 2 years.
I know you read that article. $42 million, $42 million, the coaches that are under investigation right now, since the start of the Southern District of New York's investigation, the FBI investigation, those coaches have earned about $42 million.
How about that? Think cheating doesn't pay in college basketball?
It's a lot of money. And let me ask you this. That doesn't get your attention, nothing will.
How many guys have been fired because of those $42 million men that they couldn't beat them in a conference final? They didn't have enough players to handle them in a semifinal. Man, one final would have, you know. Anyway, I consider it like steroids in baseball. You know, people know that they're doing it. No one wants to call each other out, and it's not victimless because that second baseman in Double A that did things right, he's home selling insurance, where that second baseman back in the day did started doing roids, and he's hitting 25 home runs in the big leagues. It's not. You're exactly right. This is not a victimless crime.
Yeah, I mean, it's not new. It's been around for a while. Unless the NCAA and this new protocol has an impact, it's not going anywhere. And that's just the way it is. And you know what? There are guys that have stepped up and said it, but I mean, they're not guys like John Thompson, Coach Knight, Dean Smith. I think people are become numb to it. I think people become numb to it because the reason people come numb to it, because there's a third party that has gotten involved in this process. So, yeah, I think back in the day, it was just a coach taking care of a prospect, his parents, or someone. Now it's a money manager. Now it's an agent. Now it's an AAU program where money is being laundered through and funneled through to take care of it. Now it's a church where people are making contributions to a church and funneling the money back to the prospect. It's become a very elaborate business with so many different entities. Obviously, I didn't even mention the shoe companies. But I mean, like, you know, you speak to some guys, they say, well, I don't even talk to recruits anymore. I just talk to the money manager. I just talk to the agent that supports their AAU program. I just talked to this guy, or I just talked to that guy. And that's the deal with the shoe companies, you know, the shoe companies who all let's face it, the shoe companies have something invested. And let me ask you this. If NIL passes and NIL is going to pass, does it resolve the issues or does it just make cheating legal?
Seth, I think there's only one thing that resolves the issues. And I've said this, and every coach agrees with me. I've said this for 10 years. Till you make the punishment, the risk, outweigh the reward, you got nothing. I mean, you literally got nothing. I mean,
why would you hold accountable the ADs and the presidents? Like, why wouldn't
I'm disappointed in this, Seth. ADs at one point were starting to get fired. I saw it at Indiana with Greenspan. I've seen it other places because a coach is cheating. Well, that seems like it stopped. Or ADs have said, you know what? I know I'm going to get fired if I fire Sean Miller or whoever. Guess what? I'm not doing it. We're not admitting it because I'm not going down with that ship. We're going to fight. And it's just disgusting. You know, look, Seth, I get it. I get it if this is the NBA. I get it if this is overseas professional basketball. I get it if this is the G League. But we're sitting here, and all these guys wear their little suits, and they talk about pride and the university and what we do for these young men. My ass. And I'm talking about the ADs and the presidents here. That's who I'm talking about. You know, one thing I've always said this, and you know better than anybody that I am not a defender of Bob Knight. But I'll tell you this, man. That dude would go play places. That dude played on home courts of other people. And that dude, if you cheated even one phone call, even made a mistake, in terms of I called the guy, other assistant called the guy the same week when it was one phone call per week, your ass was fired and you better fight your way back on that staff. And I have so much respect for that now as I look over what's happening now, because what you said is absolutely true, Seth. What you said, we deal with the money manager. We deal with this guy. We deal with this shoe company. We deal with this. I give guy like Knight or a guy like John Thompson, who when he passed away, you know, the biggest drug dealer in D.C., he called him in and said, "You're not messing with my players." And the guy said, "Yes, sir." Look, I feel like kind of what you said, honor among thieves. But now it's gotten to the point where if you're, and my point, I guess, is more this than anything else. If you really, really study and love college basketball, we are at a position of crisis. I know we have a chance here to dominate the sport, but are people going to pay attention? Does anybody care when the sport is viewed as completely corrupt? And I swear to God, it would be so easy to fix. Again, people thought the NFL was going away because of head injuries. All you heard for 2 years, head injuries, boom, boom, boom. Next thing you know, man, they got together. They figured it out. College basketball, you know, that old thing where you got a hand and you got five fingers or four fingers and a thumb going in separate direction, or you got a fist.
Yeah.
I feel like football decided we're going to become a fist. And I feel like college basketball is a hand that is only, and the best, the most popular, the most influential coaches, the richest coaches care about one single thing, their interests, their little mountaintop. And I think we got to look at that seriously. And we got to at least talk about changing that perspective. We got to get people involved and people in a fist.
All right. Here's my deal. Before we get Mike Borkin on the line, I have one thing on that. I think the sentiment in the public is different than it was 20 years ago. I think the sentiment in the public, not in the profession, not the guys that are getting fired, but in the public is these kids, you know, we've gotten to the point where, oh, woe is me. These kids are being exploited. They deserve to get paid. This is not amateur sport. And I actually think the sentiment in the public is like, there's nothing wrong with these guys cheating. I really believe that. I really believe that. I don't know if I'm right, but I think that there's so much sentiment publicly that these kids, which is, you know, to me personally, I disagree with it. But I think that's, you know, people say, oh, the reason you disagree with it because, you know, you got rich, coach. First of all, I didn't get to coach. 9% of the guys in my guys didn't get to, you didn't get a coach for money.
No.
I had no idea. I never knew until I went to Virginia Tech, my second contract, how much I was getting paid. I never asked. I mean, it's just the way it is. Didn't have an agent. So, I do think public sentiment is such that is, you know, hurting us. Public sentiment that, you know, and what we're going to find out is with this NIL that the players, my gut feeling is there'll be one or two guys that something is going to happen for. Guys will make a little money as influencers, but the money that people think is going to be spewed around all over the place isn't what people think it's going to be. And I'm interested to follow that. But we're going to have Mike Boynton coming on the show from Oklahoma State, who's got really, really, he's weathered a little bit of a storm, and he's got a pretty interesting team. All right, we want to welcome you guys into the world's, we call it the world's greatest podcast. We don't know why, but we believe it is. It basically, what we try to do is we had just tried to make this like a bunch of coaches talking ball. This is the anti-guru podcast, the anti-insider podcast where, you know, people think they know, but they don't know what they don't know. So welcome in. And hey, just real quickly, just to start with the pandemic stuff and everything, right? Last year, we get word, obviously, that the season's shutting down. What has this time been between that moment and where we are in this moment in time been for you, your program, your staff, your family?
First of all, good morning, guys. I appreciate you having me. I'll say this. I think it was March 12th that we left Kansas City from our conference tournament. We had won a game the night before. Our team was playing really well at the end of the season last year. And you know, we're going to play Kansas in Kansas City. So it's going to be a tough game, but you know, we're excited to be playing at that time of year. And obviously just the sheer shock first of just the season being canceled, just almost like in an instant, it felt like, And then I couldn't imagine at that time, to be perfectly honest, that I would be sitting here on October 27th, still essentially dealing with the ramifications of it all. And to be honest, I'm sitting here on October 27th trying to get ready for this season, and I don't even have a schedule finished for, I guess I'm supposed to play a game in less than 30 days. So it's been absolutely crazy. What I've tried to do is be positive with our guys. You know, there's always a lesson in everything that you go through, and try to get our guys to see where the lessons are here, opportunities to show some resiliency, some adaptability. And I think for the most part, our kids have done that. So I'm very, very appreciative of them.
Coach, I just saw something on Twitter. Fran Fraschilla tweeted, and you said, never been more proud of a coach or a young man. Talking about Dean Mitchell, he's a walk-on but a star. And this is so important to me. On the list of people I want my son Ace to look up to, Dean Mitchell is number one. Can you talk about this walk-on kid and give a little of the background of all the stuff this kid's involved in?
Yeah, it's a pretty incredible story. So Dean Mitchell's a kid from East Texas, Jefferson, Texas, to be exact. He came here just as a regular student. He's a junior now, so 2 years ago. He had played basketball in high school, but he's from a small town, and he never really got recruited at a serious level. And so he just came to Oklahoma State to be a student. He actually came to my office during the fall semester that year and asked about, you know, walking on and being around the team. At that time, you know, we hadn't planned on adding any walk-ons. And so I told D, hey, you know, let's stay in touch, man. You know, shoot me an email. Let's follow up. You know, you never know how this thing turns out. Well, that season, in the middle of the year, I have to dismiss six guys in January. And we have open tryouts. And D. Mitchell was one of the kids that came out to those open tryouts. He had just been a student here on campus, heard about it, and wanted to give a shot. So he ended up making the team as a walk-on that and stayed with us the end of the year. Funny story, we go to Texas Tech, the team that year that went to, I believe it was the finals. Like they almost won a national championship. And he makes a big shot in the second half of that game as a walk-on to almost help us win. And then he comes back last year. He's continued to be with us. He's continued to work hard, have a great attitude. Well, this, you know, obviously everybody's been affected by this pandemic in one way or the other. Well, one of the effects of the pandemic is D. Mitchell's mom lost her job. And he came to me in August and said, hey, coach, I'm not sure I can stay with the team. I have to get a job to help my mom pay for me to go to school. I don't know where I'm going to work. I don't know what I'm going to do, but I have to do this in order to be in school. So I asked him, I said, D, what? Tell me how many hours you're taking. He said, I'm in 19 hours, which is basically six classes. You know, unheard of for an athlete, to be honest. And so I'm like, D, you sure you can work and do that? He says, coach, I don't have a choice. And I said, well, listen, if you're going to commit yourself to being that dedicated to make, doing things the right way, you have a spot here. I don't care if you can only show up to practice one day a week or if you can show up 3 days a week, but whenever you can be here, we want you around. We need D. Mitchells around our program. And so he got a job at Walmart about a week later. He's been working 40 hours a week at Walmart. He showed up to practice probably 3 days a week. Outside of that, he always comes in and left at 6 a.m. before he goes to work a class with our strength coach. He always comes after his work shift to shoot with our managers or GAs. I mean, you talk about an absolute superstar, a kid who won't take his circumstances and let them define him. That kid's an absolute star, and I meant every word I said. He is on the list of guys that I want my son to look up to. D. Mitchell is number one.
That's great stuff. Now that's, you know, Dan and I were literally just talking about the state of college basketball and like, you know, how maybe our sport has lost its sex appeal. A story like that.
Right.
Everyone gets caught up in NIL and everyone gets caught up in, sure, you know, transfer waivers, and anyone gets caught up in the players are being exploited or this or that, whatever it is.
Yep.
And here's a guy that just, you know, he appreciates you. He appreciates Oklahoma State. He appreciates the opportunity. He's going to get as much out of it as you can humanly possibly get out of it. And I mean, that's just an incredible, incredible story.
I'll add this if I could. So every program has values, core values, standards, whatever you, yep, you know, different coaches call them different things. We call ours the four pillars of Oklahoma State basketball, and they are respect, appreciation, accountability and discipline. And I couldn't look D. Mitchell in the face knowing that what he represents is all those things and tell them that he couldn't be a part of our team because he was going to have to work a little harder to make it happen. And so I want every recruit that I talk to understand D. Mitchell's story and the impact that that young man, because of his attitude and approach to life, he's going to be a success no matter what he decides to do.
That is. I'm sorry, we'll have to beep this out, but that's good, man. I mean, that's just real stuff. I mean, that's just that's real stuff. And
I think we do get so caught up in the ancillary things, the things that sell, you know, articles or newspapers or get headlines, that we forget the true mission of our profession is to help people like D. Mitchell be successful and to teach other young guys that everybody's path isn't the NBA. I mean, we talk about pros way too much. There aren't that many pros in college basketball. There's some really good college basketball players, but most of these guys are going to go do something else to make a living. And the more we can talk about that and get back to the essence of what our profession is supposed to be about, the sooner we'll get back to being a pretty sexy profession to be in and a pretty sexy thing for people to look into.
Oh man, that's 100%, man. I mean, like that is right on it. I mean, like, here's the deal. I mean, you know, Dan and I always talk about what, you know, we devalue the value of education. We devalue the value of the college experience. We devalue the value of the networks that have developed through athletics that build bridges for you for guys to cross after they're done playing. And you know, everyone runs their own race, and everyone runs a different race. And you know, some guys run a race to the NBA. That's like 0.1, you know, 0.01%. But what the rest of the dudes, they got to actually be able to integrate into the rest of society, and that's what college teaches you, whether you're an athlete or not an athlete. So I mean, that's just an awesome story. On the other end, you got Cade Cunningham, who is like that 0.0001%. Just having a guy like that in your program, a guy that could have, after the NCAA said that you guys would be eligible to participate in the NCAA tournament, which I think you guys are appealing, said, you know what, coach, I'm with you. You know, you gave him an opportunity. You told him you were going to make phone calls. You told him that, you know, whatever you do, and I'm going to support you. What has it been like having that guy on your campus? With, I mean, your team is real. You have a really good basketball team. You've got experience in the right places. You've got a star player. But what's that guy meant to you and his loyalty to just wanting to be part of Oklahoma State?
It's been remarkable. And if I could, just for clarity, we are appealing the decision by the NCAA. Right. And because of that, and I want to kind of get this out there because it's been misrepresented a little bit, and I understand why. If the NCAA tournament was played today, Oklahoma State would be eligible for the tournament. Okay. So we are eligible until which time the appeal is finalized and they say it stands. So everyone's kind of putting their projections out and saying we're not eligible. That I understand why they're saying that, but it's not technically true as of today. We're appealing, so it's stayed. The penalties are stayed. So if the tournament was played before this thing's finalized, which it could, you know, crazy things have happened during this pandemic, we would be eligible for the tournament. I hope we have a team capable of making it. But no question, Kay's been tremendous to have here, obviously because we feel like he helps our team from a talent standpoint elevate the level of our program. At the same time, we have an obligation to make sure we hold him to the same standards that we hold D. Mitchell to, so that he can have the maximum amount of success that he's capable of having. And so my job is to find ways to challenge him, which are going to look very different than the way I challenged D. Mitchell, but it has the same purpose. How do we get him to be able to maximize his time here on campus, which, you know, all the expectations are, won't be very long. The best thing about Cade is he's an unbelievable teammate. He's extremely coachable, and he wants to be really good, which means he's got a humility about him. He doesn't believe that he knows everything. He comes in to watch his film as much as anybody does, which is very rare for a freshman. He calls and he asks questions after reviewing practice tape about things and ways he can get better. And so because of those things that you really can't measure, you can't find out until you have a kid on campus how invested they are in improving. He's going to have a chance to really help our team have success on the court, but also put himself in a position where he can be able to make the next leap for him.
Coach, how much do you have to balance? I coached a team for 7 games at Indiana that was extremely jealous of a one-and-done kid in Eric Gordon, and there's a balance there. How has that gone?
It's been my experience, to be honest, Darren, is probably a little different than yours because it wasn't as widely accepted back then.
Right.
It's so kind of normal. It almost would be borderline criminal if he wasn't able to leave after this year somehow, right? That if he came back to school next year, it would be more of a criticism than it would be praise. And so I think we're just dealing with a different circumstance. His teammates love him. Part of what we got here is he's from not far from here. You know, Stillwater's about a 4-hour drive from Dallas, where he's from. We've got several guys on our team from Dallas who all grew up playing with him, watching him play. So they respect his ability. They know he's good enough to help them be better. And because he hasn't comported himself in a way that says, I'm better than you, right? He's just a regular guy. He wants to be just a regular guy in a locker room. So his teammates don't really look at him different because he doesn't carry himself different, right? He doesn't ask for a special order when we eat. He doesn't want a different place to live. He doesn't want to be the guy that has the ball in his hands every possession. And so because he has that humility, he's been widely accepted by his teammates.
Well, I'll tell you one thing, that's a heck of a statement, because I've always had this kind of mindset: if you have one and done, you're done. Dan knows, he's heard me say it before. I mean, if you saw what happened, say at Washington last year, which actually they had two, or what happened with Langford, and most times it's not the kid, it's the players in the program. But the culture and your non-negotiables and your core beliefs in your program are a little different. Who's had the greatest influence on you, man? I mean, I know you played for Coach Odom.
Wow.
Some.
Yeah.
But you've worked for some crazy dudes.
All of my coaches, Coach. That's why I have such a respect for this profession, is because I know the impact that it's had on my life. And I'm talking back to high school. Kenny Pruntlow back in Riverside Church, and Ernie Lorch, and Bob Leckie at Bishop Lachlan High School. And then I was recruited by Coach Fogler, played for him for a year, played for Coach Odom for 3 years. You know, Coach George Ravlin's been a tremendous influence and mentor in my life since I was about 12 years old. And so it's really been coaches. It starts with my dad. I was fortunate growing up in Brooklyn, New York. Got a lot of friends who grew up without a dad. I wasn't one of them. I had both of my parents at home. And that really gave me an edge. You know, if we're just being honest, it helped me because I understood the value of having a male figure of authority in my life. I understood the necessity of being disciplined and doing what you're told. So the foundation was laid really early, but as it relates to the profession, it's mostly the guys that I played for, but then I worked for some really good guys too, Coach. I worked for Mike Young for a year at Wofford before he went to Virginia Tech. I worked for Bus Peterson at Coastal Carolina. I worked for Darren Horn at South Carolina. And then I worked for Frank for a year when he came in. And then obviously I worked for Brad for 4 years, 3 at Stephen F. Austin, in a year here, he's 1 year here at Oklahoma State. So I've been really, really fortunate. I've been around so many good people and guys who have a great appreciation of the work that it takes to be successful, the discipline, the commitment to the kids. You know, people talk about Frank all the time and how gruff and mean he may seem. He may be the nicest guy I've ever met, seriously, away from the basketball court. Now, he is extremely demanding, and rightfully so. These kids need discipline. But off the court, man, he would take the shirt off his back and give it to somebody.
Oh, that's 100%. I was an assistant in Miami when Frank was the assistant coach at Miami High. And my brother played for Coach Ravlin, was his first recruit at Washington State. And there's no better mentor to have than Coach Ravlin. I mean, he's an amazing guy. But, what you just said, you played for guys that demanded of you. You know, I mean, you're not going to find a much more demanding coach, high school coach, than you had in high school. You're not going to find, you know, I mean, Eddie Fogler, there's no bullshit with Eddie Fogler. I mean, it is what it is. And the same thing with Coach Odom, and like all the guys you work for. What advice would you give? What, you know, like our profession right now, just full disclosure. I mean, we opened up the show, and, you know, Dan really feels that, Dan, explain, our professional like we don't hold other people accountable. Yeah. And so therefore the perception of our profession is absolutely in the lowest point. You know, we're keeping coaches like, you know, that, you know, are right now under major investigation on video, you know, on audio tapes doing major violations, 5 and 6 and 7 major violations. And we need people that are going to hold guys accountable. That's because that's a sign of love. I've always felt the heart. If I coach my guys hard, I did it because I loved them that much that I wanted to see them get somewhere they couldn't get themselves. Do you think playing for those type of coaches has helped you have that perspective?
Absolutely. Again, those guys shaped the way I view my job because I know the impact that it had on me personally. I wouldn't be here if it had not been for the experiences and the challenges that were presented to me by the coaches I played for. As it relates to our profession, I think there's a lot of conflict all around. There's a lot of guys making a lot of money. There's no question about it, right? So it's hard for people to stand up and fight, you know, the system, so to speak, that helps them afford the opportunity to live the way they live. And so it's certainly an eyesore for our profession when you wake up almost seemingly once a month at least and you read an article about how convoluted the business is. You know, the truth is both of you guys know, right? Everybody's not cheating. In fact, if there are 350 coaches out there, there's probably 325 of them who are not cheating and would not. Just their moral compass, their ethics wouldn't allow them to do that and put in jeopardy their reputation, their family's reputation, the integrity of the university they work for. But there's some bad apples out there. There's no question about it. What do we do about it? I don't know. I don't have answers. Obviously, I inherited a situation where we were going through an investigation. It's part of the reason we're having to deal with the NCAA now. I was very forthright. I answered every question at every turn that was asked of me. We participated fully. We kind of got hammered a little bit on the back end of that, but we have to have a real discussion about what we want our profession to be like in 25 years. We get so caught up now in, you know, the good for us at the moment. It goes very much against what we teach our players every day. Is don't get caught up in how much you play as a freshman, right? It's about developing. It's about getting better. It's about walking out of here with a degree and putting yourself in position to be a successful husband, father, person in your community. But we don't hold ourselves to those same standards, and it's a bit frustrating.
You know, Coach, you said it better than I said it. I said it more of a rant. You said it with a great deal of intelligence and insight. But let me ask you. The easy answer is, man, I just control what I can control. That's the easiest answer. And if you do that, then fine. But when you do wake up and you see guys doing all these things and you see there is no accountability, you know, like today with Sean Miller, where their Board of Regents says we're not doing nothing. Is it frustrating?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's always frustrating when you feel like if you're doing your job and playing by the rules and you're maybe coming up short, but you think you have suspicion or there's some evidence out there that the people who you're competing against in some instances are not only subverting the rules, but getting away with it and then having the success and then getting rewarded for that success. Absolutely. It's frustrating. It's almost deflating to a certain extent. I read Pete Thamel's article this morning and I heard there was an AD and a coach somewhere, obviously anonymously saying, you know, we're not even paying attention to it anymore. And what I've tried to do, to be perfectly honest, is I've tried to stay above the fray because there are certain recruiting situations that the moment I hear it may be going in this direction, then I can't risk that. There's too much at stake for me. There's too many people that are not counting on me to have success. No one's getting rich because I'm a coach, but I owe it to George Ravlin and Eddie Fogler and Bob Leckie and those guys that I work for to make sure that they don't have someone that's been associated with them that has their name tied up in something that was, you know, below the radar. So I try to stay above it. It's frustrating when then you get into a recruiting battle and you feel like you've done all the right things and, you know, it doesn't go your way. You have suspicions that there's a reason why. The problem is, and I think you guys both understand this, some of this stuff is hard to really prove. Right. Yeah. And some of it is embellished, to be perfectly honest. You know, they're guys who probably claim they get things that they never get or maybe promise things that they never really get. And so that's where the challenge comes. At what point can you actually prove the transaction happens, right? And that's where, because now everybody just lawyers up because they got enough money to. I guess probably there was a time where you wouldn't lawyer up because you couldn't afford to. So.
I'm with you. Like, literally, like, back in the day, I mean, I didn't have enough money to fight something, and I didn't want my parents to see their son cheating. But, hell, coach, cheating pays, man. I'm looking at $42 million to some coach. Pete Thamel's article, the one that you referenced, cheating pays in college hoops. And I do think we've got to change that perception, because I think that's what you just said earlier about, hey, man, I wake up once a month, and damn. I mean, the average fan, you know, if they see it once a year, they say, well, everybody's cheating. And the perception, I do think, needs to change. And that's what I'm hot about. I want to see college basketball be great. But, man, oh, man, the more I talk to people, it's like, damn, everybody cheating. I'm like, no, everybody's not cheating. All right? And then they say, well, nobody's held accountable. And I said, well, that's hard to argue now when you read what you read the last few days. That is a hard argument to say that, no, man, people are held accountable. It's just it's a bitch of an article or an argument to try to make. It is.
Here's the Dan, don't you think, Coach, there's so many entities involved now. Like, you know, back in the day, even Mike, when you were recruited, all right, you know, people recruited your family, people recruited your high school coach, people recruited maybe you know had a relationship with whoever was coaching you for Riverside. Now there's money managers involved. There's, you know, runners for agents involved. There's, you know, there's the shoe companies involved. There's so many different entities involved in that circle of influence. And the more people that are involved, if you just get one person is pulling in the wrong direction, it literally flips the whole recruiting process. I call it the Hamilton effect. In the room where it happens, if you got one guy that has an agenda that is against the rules, and that guy is the voice that people are listening to, it changes the recruitment, right?
No question. I, you know, my experience is, you know, probably because I wasn't good enough for anybody to try to get anything from me. But my parents, we sat down and we did four home visits. You know, if it wasn't you didn't have enough respect for my parents to come in and explain to them why, you know, you should be the coach that we send our kid wherever to go play for, then you didn't have a chance. So we sat down and we did home visits. I visited three schools, South Carolina, UMass, in Boston College. I was being recruited by Hofstra. Jay Wright was there at the time. So obviously it was an easier trip for me. I didn't have to take an official visit there. I went to visit Seton Hall, and Coach Amaker was the head coach there. And so that was it. There really wasn't a whole lot. And it was my parents. Coach Leckie organized the times that we visited. He didn't go on any visit. He didn't come to our home for the visits. He just kind of wanted to know what I thought. And you know, my recruitment was pretty cut and dry. I was going to make the decision with the advice from my parents and the guidance just through the process from my coaches. That's it. It wasn't any influence. And so because of that, it probably was a pretty comfortable process for the coaches involved. Well, now, you know, you never know. There's an uncle out there. There's a cousin that used to train them. There's a trainer. And yeah, there's a lot of entities involved, and it just makes the process more difficult, because what gets lost mostly is what the kid wants a lot of times.
Yeah.
And I'll be honest, I've heard stories of this. I've never really been involved in a kind of a recruitment where there was someone trying to get something. But the ones that I've heard of, it's always been someone outside of the kid. Like, the kid's not benefiting from this most of the time, if any. And so it's frustrating, because at the end of the day, we go back to the first part of our conversation. What's the mission of this? It's to try to put kids in position to have success in their lives. And that goes totally counter to advancing that process.
This is good stuff. Coach, before we let you go, and I know, Dan, you got your show and everything. I look at your team, and I mean, your team has the potential to be a not only an NCAA tournament team, but a team that can win games. I mean, you have enough of a mixture of youth and experience. You have enough athleticism. You've developed a little bit of depth now. How has practice been in a pandemic with less exposure maybe to your team and less video work, or maybe you're still able to have that? But you know, how have your guys adjusted, and where are you right now even though you don't know who you're going to play maybe November 25th.
Yeah, I say this, you guys will understand it. I love my team. It's been 3 years. So when I took over, I was the third coach in 3 years. You guys know the hardest thing to do is build some continuity and stability in your program if you always have turnover like that. And so it's been a while. It's been an uphill battle. The NCAA sanctions or decision back in June didn't help. But our team stayed together. For the most part, we lost one kid, the kid, shot blocker, Urne, who went to SMU. But we brought everybody back because they believe in what we've been preaching for the last 3 years, what they are here to do together. We don't have a great sense of urgency right now as a defensive rebounding team because I've got three freshmen on the court a lot, and they just don't have an urgency. Some urgency that blocking out matters. But other than that, I really like where we are. I think I have as good of a collection of guards as there are anywhere. I'll put my backcourt of Isaac Likely and Kate Cunningham. I'll go play anybody with those two guys leading the charge. And we got a post-presence emerging in Caleb Boone, who came on at the end of his freshman year last year. Yeah, the challenge is, you guys do this too. You pick your league, the order to finish in your league, and I'm looking at I'm getting a headache just thinking about we have to play everybody twice because our league is so good and so deep. The team you pick ninth because you can't pick yourself could easily finish second or win the league. And it's very unique in our conference that way that we do play a true round robin. And so we feel like we have the depth to really be competitive in our league. And if we do that, we feel like we'll be competitive against anybody in the country because we feel like we play in the best conference in America.
Great stuff.
That's good stuff, man. This was, I can't appreciate enough. And I know the guys you played for, and I know how proud they are of you. I know all of them. I mean, I know your high school coach. I know A to Z. Great respect for, it's good to hear your commitment to wanting to do things the right way and your appreciation because you got into coaching to change lives. And, a lot of guys got to get into coaching today for the money. And it's not about the money. It's about having an impact to do something for someone else that's like what was done for you.
And I don't want to be a hypocrite. I tell my guys every day, take care of the process, let the process take care of the results. I'll make enough money if I do things the right way. So I don't worry about that. I worry about, can I go to sleep at night knowing that I gave my best to the people who hired me to do this job and to the kids who committed to playing for me and their parents who decided to trust me with those kids. So that's literally what I think about every single day.
Hey, team. This is producer Taylor Schwenk. Before we move on today, I want to remind you that season 2 of the ESPN Investigates podcast is now available. The Running Man tells the story of an obscure former Olympian and alleged serial sexual predator and how a 14-month ESPN investigation brought him out of the shadows. More than 50 men were physically abused and mentally manipulated by their quote-unquote coach for over 40 years until they banded together decades later to find justice. Subscribe and listen to ESPN Investigates wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Seth Greenberg, you ready? We got news. We got to report news on this show.
All right.
Junior got a job, Dobo, Mike Schragi at Elon College.
Elon. Yes, I saw a little tweet today. Saw a picture of him.
He's off the payroll, on insurance. Hey, Shragi, can you get the boy a car and maybe I don't know a phone to get off that stuff?
Wait, so, you just got him a car. I thought he had a crash, but then you got him a new car. I mean, it's good being your son.
It hadn't been bad. I ain't gonna lie, there, big boy. Last thing before I let you go, before we end this podcast. You mentioned this early, and if you could go quick on this, a lot of people asking me, ESPN shut down the events that were going to be in Orlando. What do you see next for them, Seth, those events?
I think there'll be events that will be offshoot from those events. Instead of 8-team events, there'll be 4-team events. I think some of those events will go to other sites. So, like, say maybe Gonzaga and Auburn could go to Fort Myer to play and to add two other teams and play 2 games. I mean, Gonzaga was going to be in Orlando for 14 days. I mean, they were basically going to play a good portion of their schedule. Now, the reason it got shot down is Disney has protocols. Some of those schools had a different protocol. Their leagues had a different protocol. So you know, everyone had to get tested. And if you tested positive, even though, or you had any remnants of the virus in, you'd have to be quarantined for 14 days. Like Mark Few told me yesterday, I'm going to fly cross country charter, spend $120,000. I get one of my guys test positive, work totally out of the tournament. We can't afford to do that. So I think there are going to be tournaments that are offshoot from that. I think the things that are going on in Mohegan Sun, which we're going to be televising, will happen. I think a lot of the key matchups will exist, but they'll exist in different environments and in different formats.
There you go. You asked. Seth Greenberg told. Thanks for listening, everybody. Great stuff today.
That was really good. What an impressive dude.
He is an impressive dude. Did you know him in high school?
I didn't try to recruit him, but his high school coach was a former 5-star guy, and obviously,
yeah, I know his high school.
He played for Coach Odom and Coach Fogler, and I mean those two guys are as good as it gets. So, you know, and here's a guy, he's doing it the right way. You know, like, look, he's trying to teach his guys accountability, and I think his messaging about, look, you know, like here's, you know, some guys are going to be, very very few guys are going to be pros. Kate Cunningham's going to be a pro, but he has a responsibility to get his guys that are not going to be pros to enjoy the process, enjoy the college experience, and get them ready for the rest of their lives. And man, if we all, you know, and I think most coaches take that approach. Unfortunately, the messaging in America across Twitter and social media is that coaches don't care about that. And I think coaches dearly care about the well-being of their guys and making sure that they're getting a degree and being employable and having success after basketball. So I thought it was great stuff.
All right, man, I got to run.
All right, go make magic.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the Hoop Collective podcast, available in the ESPN app or Apple Podcasts.